Greetings and welcome to KROV Oroville again. It's Lee Edwards with Our Town. We're here at 91.1 FM. We're also on the World Wide Web at KROV.FM Community Radio. And today's guest is Cass Mutters from the Butte. Okay, here we go. Butte County Cooperative Extension. Here we go. This is official. Cooperative Extension, Butte County, and they're located on Del Oro Avenue, and it's a UC, University of California, Agricultural and Natural Resources. There's enough titles here. Enough titles here to be a library book. Okay, so let's begin wherever we can, Cass. I guess the basic overview of services you provide, how it's organized is important, and accessibility for people, anything like that, letting them know that what you are and what you do.
Absolutely, Lee. Thank you for inviting me to come over and visit with you a little while today. And my name is Cass Mutters, and I work for the University of California Cooperative Extension. And before we get started, I'd like to just put out our telephone number to you. So if there's something of interest that Lee and I touch on today, feel free to give us a call. That phone number is 538-7201.
Okay, is there a website, too, with a lot of things listed that they can go through?
Yeah, you can. You can go to Butte County Cooperative Extension. If you Google that, our website should pop right up, and then you could have access to not only information that's useful in and around the house and garden, but also you could get an idea of the sort of programs that we provide at the local office. Our office is actually in the old county hospital building adjacent to the county courthouse at 2279 Del Oro Avenue, and you're more than welcome to stop by if you're in the neighborhood. Well, Lee, just to give you a little bit of an update, or maybe some background, University of California is part of the land grant system, which was actually created by Abraham Lincoln as part of the Homestead Act. So you and I wouldn't be having this conversation if it wasn't for Abraham Lincoln. Butte County Cooperative Extension has been here since 1918, so we're coming up upon our 100th anniversary. The type of programs that we provide are information and education, not only to larger production agriculture, but we also have programs in honeybee production, food and nutrition, integrated pest management for orchardists, and probably the program that most people are familiar with is 4-H. We do coordinate the 4-H program out of our office. And then another program that we have that is very popular here in the community is the Master Gardener program.
Yeah, that's the one I kind of wanted to get at a little bit, because it seems to me that my limited experience. I don't do much with gardening, but I have questions about things. And if I call, always get either a call back or catch somebody, and they seem to just know everything. And if for chance there's something they have any question about, they'll give you what they have, and then they'll get back to you. It's like having an encyclopedia, and you don't really have to know how to spell things. You just have to ask things. And anything from what kind of native plants, what time do you plant something? How do you know if something's ready to harvest? There's some weird stuff on my plant that looks funny. I mean, anything you can conceive of, these people are dedicated. And as I recall, I think they do an occasional sort of outreach where they'll invite people and they'll have a presentation there or something like that too. Have a speaker or something like that. So, yeah, that's pretty close to everybody. Everybody has a piece of ground around them out here.
Absolutely, Lee. The Master Gardener program is really quite dynamic. It's made up of volunteers that go through some pretty extensive training conducted by the University of California. It's actually a 70-week training, one day a week, And our next class of Master Gardeners will begin their training in January, and it goes all the way to May. And as you were saying, Lee, we do have Master Gardeners that staff phone banks. If you have questions, you can call in. You can send us emails, and there is just a wealth of information available to the backyard gardener, everything from when to plant to diagnosing problems. And if we don't know the answer, we'll sure look and find it and get back to you.
Yeah, you're part of a system that, well, that's what you do. Well,
you're right. You know, fortunately, we have the resources of the University of California system that we bring to the local community.
Mm-hmm. I'm taking notes as I talk to you, even though it's just being recorded. So there's no fear about not getting something contemporary either, because that's the other thing. I'm sure in any field there's things you can find in a book, and you can read that, and maybe that information is not only out of date, maybe it's been proven not to be so accurate or to be a good idea. And so that way you've always got the folks that are right on the cutting edge of what's going on out there.
Oh, absolutely. We try to make sure that we provide the most up-to-date, current information to the local community in regard to their gardening questions.
Okay, so we'll have to thank Abe Lincoln. That's interesting. Yeah, and so every state has their own...
Every state, as part of the Homestead Act that was signed in 1862, there was a university established in every state of the country, and that's called the Land Grant Institution. Yeah. Here in California, the University of California is the Land Grant Institution, and there's three campuses that are involved in agricultural research: Berkeley, Davis, and Riverside.
Okay.
And part of that mission is to establish local offices, cooperative extension, which you have right here in Butte County, to extend information and provide educational programs to the local community.
So now we know where the word extension is. You're extending.
That's it.
Starting from the information source, extending it to the information
needers. Correct. And the cooperative part is this program is actually funded by a joint USDA, U.S. Department of Agriculture, California State, and the local Butte County. That's the cooperative part.
Well, that's one of the things, when I talk to people a lot, we have people with all sorts of careers or interesting things and so on, but so many are working with organizations or groups or that they just don't know. They bite their fingernails every time another budget year comes up or something like that, and some of them disappear, and that they're really valid things. But for whatever reason, population density or who knows what, this area or some people get cut out of it. And this is the beauty, of course, of what you mentioned. You have the phone, you have the internet. So folks can really, get something that I think is amazing. Maybe people are spoiled and they think, well, all we got to do is push a button on Google and we got our answers. Well, maybe that's true, but this is tailored to our area, to our region. You know, you get an extension service in New York State, they might not be as valid, the information they give you, as what we got right here.
Yeah, we are tailored to the local community, Lee, and we provide information that applies here to Butte County specifically if you're talking about gardening, because planting season here and harvest season is different than it would be in other parts of the state.
Yeah, and I bet you, how about within the county? Because of the elevation changes, somebody in Oroville or Chico might have a different situation from somebody up in the hills a ways, Sterling City, Paradise. That's almost are they different climate zones per se?
Yes, they are. That's a really good question, Lee. Actually, we do have some different climatic zones here in Butte County. Interestingly enough, the valley floor tends to get a little cooler in the winter because we have cold air drainage coming off the mountains. Here in the Oroville area, we have what we refer to as the banana belt.
Yeah.
So up just a little bit in elevation, it's not quite as cold, and that's where you see the orange groves, and actually an avocado orchard here in the local area can survive in that banana belt.
Wow.
A little further up at Berry Creek, well, their frost-free period is a bit shorter than it is down here on the valley floor.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. Yeah, it's really it's a chance for people to get an appreciation for the world around them. A little, it forces it upon them whether they're interested in learning about it or not. They're going to be exposed and they're going to learn, and especially they talk with people that live in other areas. Mm-hmm. And we're sure blessed in many ways. How did you ever get the idea, like when you were a kid playing with Tinker Toys or whatever, you say someday what I want to do is work for the Extension Service? That doesn't happen too often.
Boy, that's quite a question. That's a long answer. Well, they could give you a short answer. I'm actually from Eastern Kentucky.
Okay.
And my family were small farmers up in the Appalachian area of Eastern Kentucky. I just had an interest in agriculture from youth, and then I've gone to several universities around the U.S. To get training in different parts of agriculture to expose myself to different environments, just like you suggest.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. That's my kind of answer. I've gone through similar things in a funny way. But this is surely not about me. What I'm looking for here, okay, so we know contact information. We have that. We have an idea of the work you can do just for any individual. You know, you don't have to be a gardener. I reckon if you found a lovely plant or a flower and you didn't know what it was, maybe you snap a picture of it and took it in, somebody could probably identify it for you.
Yes, we can identify mystery plants. Sometimes if I'm stumped, then I'll get a hold of a plant taxonomist on the UC Davis campus and help me out with a little bit. And it's interestingly, in that way, we've actually found some invasive species that we didn't know were out there that have been given to us by the local community because, you know, those eyes and ears on the ground sure expand our vision of what we can see happening out there in the greater landscape. So we love hearing from you.
That brings up a very sore point on my mind. Coming from the East Coast out here, and I had some have honeybees, and I discovered people sing the praises of honey and where it comes from. And star thistle, of course, can affect the horse's brain if it eats it, so it's considered an invasive plant. But for people that like honey, it's one of the premium varieties. So we have folks at odds as to what you're going to do. So, and a lot of the, you know, the things of getting rid of some of these things, there can be value in them, but they have to be grown, I'm sure, in an area where it's more.
Well, I believe you said you just highlighted the one redeeming value of star thistle. Beyond that, I don't think there's much else.
Yeah, not too much, probably.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, star thistle was introduced to California in about the 1880s in a load of alfalfa that came from Eastern Europe. And it spread from the Bay Area, where it was first introduced, to cover millions of acres across the state.
That's amazing. And that reminds me, too, I've traveled quite a bit by car, including from coast to coast. And, okay, so I didn't go to every state available. But it was very interesting to come into this thing, welcome to California, pull over here, please. And then they're there, they're wanting to know what you're bringing in. They especially want to know about things that grow. Is that a pretty, I know it's not ag extension, but it's still a part of your information. Is that a pretty successful, helpful program, do you think?
I believe it's essential to the long-term viability of the agricultural industry here in California. And here's why, Lee. In California, we grow commercially about 360 different crops. There's no other state in the country that does that. And many of the crops of those 360 are unique to California and are not grown in any substantive way in any other state in the country. Almonds are a great example. 99% of the almonds in the U.S. come from California. So the idea of that inspection at the state border is to head off any pests that might be invasive that would damage our agricultural industry here in California. The other point, one more point here that people don't always understand, or perhaps appreciates a better word, is we live in a Mediterranean climate. There are only 5 Mediterranean production zones on the whole planet. So what we have here is extremely unique, and it's certainly worth protecting for future generations and for the pleasures that we enjoy from the abundance that's grown here.
Yeah, I can see that. And who would think something as simple as this? Some plant or something you're carrying. Who would have a clue?
Oh, that, you know, those little insects are they're hitchhikers on these plants that bring in, and once you let them out in the neighborhood, they go on their merry way.
Yeah, I can't even remember now. I'm embarrassed because if I think hard for something, I can't figure it. But we had something on our little travel trailer. They took one look and that says, "Hold on," and it's some kind of a pest from back east, and it was in a dormant form on a propane tank or something like that, and they got rid of that, everything they could find at the border. And then when we got up to the Oroville area, they had us check in again with somebody from, I guess, probably Extension or whatever part of the Ag Service it is.
Yes.
And let them do a re-inspect to make sure there's nothing they missed at the border. And
you know, a good example of that is the zebra mussel. Which is an invasive species introduced from ballast water being blown into the Great Lakes that is clogging up the waterways in and around the Great Lakes. So when boats come in from out of state, the California Department of Food and Agriculture actually inspects the boat to make sure they don't have one of those zebra mussels hanging on a boat that could be introduced into our delta, for example.
Well, obviously there's a great climate here, and it's a great place for things to thrive, no matter what they do for a living. Well, what a better deal if you wanted to grow them on purpose. You
can absolutely.
Sure grow them here.
Yeah.
Okay. And you mentioned, as early as I was talking to you, or maybe you mentioned it here, my first experiences with, well, organized agriculture, that's a silly word to call it, but it was the 4-H. It wasn't necessarily ag, but most of the 4-H programs in our state when I was a kid were aimed a lot toward agriculture, and that's a part of your office over there, right?
Yes, we do. We administer the 4-H program here in Butte County, and as you were saying, historically it's been an ag-oriented youth program. But today, the array of programs and real-life experiences provided to the 4-H youth is really amazing. It's everything from raising a cow to woodworking to public speaking to computer technology. We've expanded the program to meet the needs of the youth, what we think, in the 21st century.
Boy, that's interesting. That really is. That really is a different vision than what I had. And I guess if... Yeah. So now if they have, which they do, county fair or something like that, they must have, they have a 4-H section, do they? Or
they do. At the county fair, it's still dominated by showing the animals that they raise, which provides with them a lot of skill sets, not only animal husbandry, but personal responsibility. But some of the other programs, for example, as we have a leadership conference where... children from the local area will go and participate in leadership activities such as public speaking at Sacramento, and the winners there will go on to a national public speaking engagement in Washington, D.C., and in fact, the past couple years, we have had youth from Butte County make it all the way to the national level.
All right, so here I'm thinking. I have had not much experience with it, and I'm being silly. Because I know the answer. But when I see open fields and I see vistas that I see riding around here, and then I think of someplace like L.A. or something like that, I mean, they have ag extension offices there, I'm sure.
Yes, they do.
And their programs are got to be markedly different to adapt to their environment.
Yes, and that's probably the most evident in the 4-H program.
Yeah.
Because you have metropolitan youth, and the challenges they face for developing responsible young adults is quite different, perhaps, than it is in Butte County. So those programs are adapted to meet those needs. But, you know, there is still an agricultural extension component in Los Angeles County, because they still grow quite a bit of citrus there, surprisingly enough.
Yeah, I was going to say, I know, I don't picture it as an ag area, but I know it's a climate, and there's certain things that do very well down there. And
it's slowly being inched out, but there's still some remnants. At one time, Los Angeles was the most productive county, agricultural county, in the United States.
Wow. That's been a while.
But now the number one county in the U.S. is Fresno County.
Okay. That makes sense. So as a what would I be going to call it, employee of the extension here, I assume because of all the changes that occur, you must have a system to help you and the folks in your office keep updated. Do they have, how does that work? In other words, like the zebra mussel or something, I mean, is there some way that that's immediately transmitted throughout the whole ag extension service system?
Yeah, there's a couple avenues for us to remain current with issues and technology. One, we do get bulletins from the California Department of Food and Agriculture just to alert us. We also work closely with the Butte County Ag Commissioner that deals with problems of inspection and quarantine. And then the researchers in my office conduct agricultural research, for example, and in doing so, we have to remain current with published literature and what our colleagues are doing so that we make sure that our research is timely and not redundant and still helpful to the local community.
I'm far removed from those who, well, I might know a couple, but those who really make a living in the agricultural branch. Well, the more I think, the more I do know people, but I've never chatted with them about it. I'm just kind of wondering, what are some of the major issues that they have to face, things you can help them with? Because I picture, you know, if you're growing a certain crop and if it's a profitable for your grandfather and then your father and then for you, you've kind of got established thoughts and so on, but somehow you have to keep them updated. In other words, if they don't reach out to you, how do you get your information to them?
Yeah, that's another good question. You're full of good questions this morning. you're right. That's part of our job, to reach out to the agricultural community, to extend current relevant information to them. One vehicle we use is we have grower meetings. We have rice grower meetings coming up in January, for example, where we invite the entire rice growing community to come and participate, and we will present to them research results from all the ongoing research being conducted by the University of California.
All right. So those that have an economic interest in survival with what their crop might be and how they do it, then okay, then they know.
Exactly, and be more specific here, just to plug it a little bit, is our annual rice grower meetings will be held in Richvale on January 19th at 8 o'clock in the morning. We invite all of you in the rice community to come on out.
Where would that be held?
It's going to be held at the Evangelical Free Church on Church Street in Richvale, starting at 8 o'clock in the morning, and you can certainly call my office at 538-7201 if you would like some more information.
Okay, there we go. And let's see what else I can come up with here. What I can come up with, the easiest way, is things that I wouldn't even know how to ask because
let me expand a little bit on what you were saying a moment ago, Lee.
Mm-hmm.
Is the challenges that a farmer would face today are really quite different than they were perhaps a generation ago, in that the cost of production is going up, so they have to improve their efficiency, economically adapt new technology in order to reach that new efficiency. And then what's superimposed upon that is just an array of new regulations that are coming down that are environmentally driven. For example, every farmer in the state of California must come up with a nitrogen management plan in order to ensure that only adequate amounts of nitrogen fertilizer are applied and nothing is excessive put on those fields to protect the groundwater. So as we move forward, those type of environmental issues are posing an additional challenge to the agricultural community throughout the state.
Yeah, I can see it as a two-way thing. I can see it as you being able to inform and educate, and I can also see when few people start bringing problems to you that may be novel or maybe aren't novel, but you're hearing a lot about them, then there you have the opportunity to. So it's an information goes both ways, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. You're right on there, Lee. You know, a lot of our, perhaps I could phrase it, our more pertinent research projects have actually arisen from conversations with farmers. They see an emerging problem out there, they'll call us out, I'll talk to them, and then we'll try to establish a research program to answer those questions that have arisen.
Okay. By the way, first person could be just tuning in. This is KROV Oroville, 91.1 FM on the internet, krov.fm. And today we're having a talk with Cass Mutters from the Butte County Cooperative Agricultural Extension Service here in town on Del Oro Avenue. Thanks to Abe Lincoln, of course. So it's been around a while. Well, that was quite a deal because I'm sure in many areas, the original land grant university, that's about all there was. I mean, that really, the idea of having one of those in every state surely got a lot of things going.
That was nothing short of visionary.
Yeah.
Yes.
Including current day football teams, but that's not important. Yes. That's secondary. But okay. Well, we've covered a lot of things. I think the youth thing, I can't get over that too much, go over it too much, because I was sure it helped a lot just by being exposed to 4-H back east where I used to live, and admiring and envying the older kids who were old enough to be in 4-H, and then learning about their projects, and then finally there I was, I could be there too. So that was really neat. And so one of the great exposures is the county fair. Are there other ways that the word gets out? Maybe about your outreach services, because phone directory is kind of impersonal. Word of mouth, how do you think people get to know that you exist and that you're there to help them?
Mm-hmm. Is that our office in general, Lee, or an individual program?
Just the office in general, yeah, just to know that such a thing is here.
Sometimes I think we're the best kept secret in the county. We do make an effort to outreach. We have regular newsletters that go out to the agricultural community. We have outreach in the local schools for joining the 4-H program. And if any of you have children that are interested in participating in 4-H, be sure to call our office. We've got an information packet that will show you how to hook those kids up. And we also have programs that reach out to local schools. So we have Ag in the Classroom, as well as nutrition programs that work closely with local elementary schools. So that's another way that we get the word out, as well as having a presence at county fairs, local places such as the Patrick Ranch on the Durham Highway.
Sure.
To let folks know that we are here.
Yeah, I can see that you're catching them, especially obviously in schools, because interestingly, well, practically, child's exposed to this idea, brings it home. Who knows where it's going to go from there?
We plant
might,
a seed.
Might go anywhere. Might go to somebody down the road that really needs to know something important that you folks know and are aware about. So what a service.
It is. Well, you know, if you look across the broader timeline, introduction to 4-H is also an introduction to the University of California. And we do want our youth to understand that there are opportunities for education at the University of California, and that 4-H is one gateway in order to be introduced to what those opportunities might hold for them.
Yeah. Yeah, it's neat to have a connection between the folks in the field and university folks. It's really important. Am I missing anything? Are there things that you want to preach about here that... we've got something you can pedestal for you if you want to get up there and do that. I don't want to miss anything.
Oh, I think you've covered the highlights, Lee. I do want to make folks aware of the different programs that we have. One that we haven't touched on is our bee program so much. We're one of the few counties in the state of California that has an active bee team where we work with local bee producers to diagnose problems and give them information how to maintain healthy colonies. And it's interesting to note that a lot of the queen rearing for beehives in and around the country actually occurs here in Butte County. So bee health is really an important part for agriculture and I think the communities in general. When you think about facts like 80% of our crops that we eat are pollinated by bees, that over 90% of the beehives in the country come to California during almond bloom. So bees are really an invisible part of agricultural and actually our dinner plates that sometimes we don't give due credit to. So we are actively involved in trying to understand colony collapse disorder and the things that management could do in order to mitigate that.
Yeah, it's close to my heart, that subject. And the interesting thing to me is that the honeybees that are such a big part of this country are all like we are. They aren't natives. They were introduced, so
That's correct.
They've done a pretty good job of adjusting and surviving. But you're right, times are tough. Times are tough. You hear about it a lot. And they make a very good image for, I think, arousing public interest.
Right? Yes.
I mean, people can, okay, they don't want to get stumped. Let's forget that. Let's just think in terms of general relationships. There's something attractive about the little critters going out to the flowers and working hard and so on and being unselfish and doing their work.
Yeah.
And so it's great to have that support. It's, I guess some people could call California what, an agricultural state? I'm sure major, obviously it is. Industrial, I mean, there's a lot of things happening in this big...
We're the number one agricultural state in the country.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, we are also the number one dairy state in the country.
Oh, right. Okay.
I don't think people sometimes realize that California has so many dairies.
Yeah. Well, it's a wonderful place to be, I'll say that. Okay, I'm still here fumbling, and in that case, I ought to be quiet and cut this thing off unless you can come up with some things, because I'm running out of questions. I'm not running out of appreciation, because it's...
Well, sometimes people ask why rice is grown here in California. Perhaps it's a little bit unusual. But the reason that it's grown in California goes all the way back to the gold mining days. If you think about it, who was performing a lot of the heavy labor back in those days, building railroads and digging irrigation ditches?
Sure.
It was immigrants from Asia, primarily China, and of course they consumed a lot of rice. So there was actually a need for rice here to feed that population, and it was really a big expense for a young, growing state. So in the mid-1870s, the California legislature actually offered a reward for the first successful rice crop to be grown in California.
Gosh.
So in the subsequent 30 years, There was lots of effort to grow Chinese varieties of rice here in California, none of them very successful because they're long grains and they require a little bit warmer temperature than what we have. So it wasn't until about the turn of the century, 1900, that a U.S. Department of Agriculture and a Japanese agronomist decided to try some Japanese varieties of rice. And the first successful rice crop was grown in Biggs in about 1910. And so all of our varieties that we're still growing today have a heavy genetic influence from Japanese varieties that were first introduced around the turn of the century. And all of the rice varieties of predominance here in California are actually bred and produced here in Butte County at the California Rice Experiment Station.
That's news to me, obviously. That's really quite a deal. Where's it located?
It's on Highway 62, west of Highway 99. Highway 162, excuse me.
Yeah, out that way, yeah.
It was originally a USDA research facility established in 1912. In 1948, it became a University of California experiment station. And then in 1968, the rice growers in and around the valley created a foundation, and they took over the experiment station. They bought it. And now the Rice Experiment Station is a grower-owned foundation that produces all of the varieties that dominate the rice landscape here in Butte County and the rest of the valley. We grow predominantly medium-grain rice here. So if you've eaten sushi, you've eaten California rice.
Okay. Well, that's another interesting thing to think about, that it's not just a matter of someone wants a crop, they go find a seed somewhere or a shoot or a plant or something, that you actually design, you plan, you learn, you study, and you choose those that under your experimental conditions seem best, and then they're out in the field, and then you get a real test of them and go from there. It's not
exactly.
It's not a simple, it's dynamic, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very complex. You know, the breeders will cross different rice varieties in order to try to produce something that's well adapted to California environment. And if you were to go out to the Rice Experiment Station during the summer, there would probably be 25,000 different crosses in the field at any one time that the growers would be selecting from.
Wow.
It takes about 10 years to develop a new variety. And those of you who are out there in the audience really have a keen interest in rice production in Butte County, I would invite you to come to the Rice Field Day at the Rice Experiment Station the last Wednesday of the month of August. It is a public event, and you can come out and get a better understanding of this important commodity here in Butte County.
Okay. Not a bad place to live, is it? People care about it. That's a good sign. And the county rewards them accordingly. Not a bad climate. And thank goodness we had a little of that wet stuff lately. I didn't know whether to celebrate or cry, but I come down Cherokee Road to get here, and it's the first day in a long time now that the air has been totally blue. There's always been some clouds and some stuff happening, which I didn't know if we were ever going to see another one. So Mother Nature's been good to us lately. We'll hope that continues. It's off the subject, but it's part of the subject. It's part of what's around you, observing it, knowing about it. Mm-hmm. And for you, fortunately, being able to do things to preserve and protect and enhance what's around us. So thank you for that.
You know, on that note, Lee, sometimes I get questions as to why do we grow rice here? Aside from the historical note that I shared with you, a lot of the soils in the Central Valley, southeastern Butte County, are really heavy clay soils that they have a hard pan. That's a compacted layer in the soil where water sits on top of it, a perched water table it's referred to. Because of that circumstance, that soil and its natural state is waterlogged. So there really is no other crop aside from a water-loving crop. such as rice, that will grow on that. And the other thing that comes up is to how much water rice will use. If you compare the amount of water that rice uses, and that's what's evaporated and what's transpired from the leaf, its use is comparable to an almond crop, tomatoes, or cotton.
Okay.
And those fields are only about 4 inches deep when you see them out there.
Oh, my. Very misleading. It looks like all the water in California is right there at that time. That's interesting. Okay. Thank you for that one, too. Well, you're on. Anything else?
Not offhand. I'm certainly open to questions. We need a phone line here, yeah, so we can field questions
later. Actually, that's right. And that was a.
But yeah. I would encourage folks again that if there's any information or questions you might have, be sure to give us a call at 538-7201. And we do have a wealth of information available to our community that covers everything from canning olives, making jellies, to controlling bats in your barns, to planting tomatoes. You would be surprised at the breadth of information that's available at your local cooperative extension office.
Sure. You have people who have dedicated their intelligence to studying these things. So they're surely going to know a lot more than you are just by maybe some observations. Makes sense. Okay, I think we'll button it up at that. And again, thanks so much to Cass Mutters from the Butte County Cooperative Agricultural Extension Service here on Del Oro Avenue in Oroville. And they're waiting to extend their information to you. All you got to do is call them, 538-7201.
Thank you so much for having me, Lee.
Thank you.